Okay, this is being recorded. This is Monday, December 9th, our teleclass, our last one for the series. And who better to have as our guest but Marcia Reynolds? How many of you know of or have heard Marcia Reynolds speak? Raise your hands. Oh, you lucky people. You came back for more, and the new ones will join the team. Dr. Marcia Reynolds is the president of Co-Visioning, LLC, since 1995. She's going to hit her 25th anniversary this coming year. And she has been fascinated by the brain, especially what triggers feelings of connection, commitment, and possibility. All kind of coaches stuff, huh? She has trained and coached leaders in 41 countries. And has presented at places you might have heard of, the Harvard Kennedy School, Cornell University, Smith College, Almaty Management University in Kazakhstan, am I saying that right? And the National Research University in Moscow. I'm sure there's more, but I only have a few minutes to introduce Marcia. She's a pioneer in the coaching profession. She was one of the first ICF members and the fifth global president. That wasn't enough for her. She returned to be a global director in ICF 2017-2018. This person is a leader. Can you mute Davide, please?
Oh, sorry.
Okay. Thank you. She's also the past president of ACTO, the Association of Coach Training Organizations. She's the training director for the Healthcare Coaching Institute at Virginia Tech and on the faculty of the International Coach Academy in Russia and Create China Coaching in China. With all of this, she's been recognized by the Global Gurus Top 30. She's the number three coach in the world. She has a master's degree in broadcast communications, a second master's degree in adult learning psychology and instructional design, and a doctorate in psychology. The title of her books I sent out to all of you, which is enough to get you to come today, Outsmart Your Brain, Wonder Woman, How High-Achieving Women Find Contentment and Direction, and The Discomfort Zone, How Leaders Turn Difficult Conversations into Breakthroughs. Last I spoke with her, she was finishing a TED Talk, which I'm sure has been finished, and has been awarded a spot in the Coaching Hall of Fame, the ICF Coaching Hall of Fame, with the Circle of Distinction Award for this year. Her website, which I will put in the chat in a moment, is outsmartyourbrain.com. Mm-hmm. With great pleasure, I introduce Marcia, who is speaking today on anger, a positive emotion. This should be good. Please proceed, Martha and Marcia, and welcome very much to Sun.
Thank you. I want you all to know I wouldn't just do this for anyone, but I would do anything for Terry. So I'm going to share my screen. So, and I will have questions for you all, but since I got a screen share on, I won't see you all, but please, you know, if we can make things conversations, it's always great. Okay, so in fact, my first question, I want you to think about when you're coaching and somebody's uncomfortable or even angry, and I want you to think about your initial reaction, not how you handle it, but what is your initial reaction when you've got clients who show anxiety, discomfort, or even anger? What is it that you tend to do? Do you shut down? Do you want to jump in and save them? What are some of your reactions? And you can unmute yourself and let me know.
Marcia, this is Jamie, and I really enjoy holding the space open for them and being a witness for them of what they're working through.
Okay, Jamie, you know what? That's a great thing is what we do, but I want to know your initial reaction before you know to do that, okay? Because we humans don't just like, oh, I'm so delighted you're anxious and you're angry. So I want
to... Well, I feel their anger. I feel it, and then my... I guess it is a natural response for me to then hold that open.
That's great. Alan?
Yes. So this is right. So this is Alan. I'm puzzled. I'm wondering what's behind the intensity.
Good.
And I want to know more about it.
Okay. Good. So you get curious.
Right.
Marcia, this is Christina. Mm-hmm. Well, my first reaction is to protect myself. Actually.
Okay. Thank you. And that's the normal human reaction. To somebody's response, it's particularly anger. Okay, who else? Now we protect ourselves in many, many different ways, you know. And the thing is to be able to recognize that that we might have a response, and you know, and then as Jamie said, what is it that we need to do at this moment to keep the person feeling safe? But the thing is to be honest, and to an anger response in the brain is that something's wrong. Okay. And it's really important that we as coaches understand that, because, you know, I've been assessing for as long as there's been assessors. Right, Terry? You know, it's like in the school I went to, Harriet Simon Salinger and I were the first assessors when we were just first getting the competencies. And it's always been interesting for me to observe how coaches handle emotional reactions in their clients, and what is it that we need to then do. And for those of us that are teachers, to help people engage in those moments. Because, you know, I mean, we can teach them, but to help them to engage. So anger in particular is one of the hardest emotions for us to deal with, because the brain tends to interpret anger as a bad thing. And even when we talk about anger, you know, there's a lot of anger in the world today, and it divides people, and the result of anger can be a bad thing. And anger can also be a good thing. You know, and the thing is that anger, like all other emotions, is just energy flowing through the body in response to something. And often, Christina, their anger is an attempt to protect themselves as well, right? You know, and so that Alan, what you were saying, trying to understand what is it. It's not, you know, it's like, what is it that they're protecting themselves against, that we're trying to discover while we're managing our own automatic reaction to that? Because the energy vibrates out, and so we pick it up no matter what, no matter if they have a, you know, poker face. And our reaction to their emotions, no matter how well we verbally handle it, we still have, and that's why I said we still have a reaction to their emotion, because we're, as a human being, we have a reaction. And so the quicker we can identify, oh, look, I'm having a reaction to that, the quicker then that we can deal with it, so we can, as Jamie said, hold that safe space for them. The safe space is not just our words, it's our physical being as well. So I want to talk for a moment about the power of anger. So as Terry told you, I actually have done in the past couple of years two TEDx talks. My last one was actually on the power of anger, and the one before that was in a women's prison, where I was talking also about how I use my anger to change my own life. In fact, this scarf I'm wearing was a gift for speaking for the women's prison. But I would say I'm sort of an expert on anger, not just by academic, but by experience. You know, I grew up in a household where my mother was angry and never understood why. It took me well into my, I think, 30s, maybe even 40s, to where I fully understood what it was that she expected to have in her life that she didn't get continually throughout her adult, I would say young adult and adult life, that made her angry. And to understand that she didn't know how to deal with her anger, she didn't see an outlet for it, so she felt fully stuck in her life. But I didn't know that. All I knew was that she disconnected from me. I had an angry mother, and my life felt, because of something that happened in grade school where it turned out years later, I found out it was a social experiment where they moved me away from all my friends. And I just randomly chose a few people and moved us away just because they thought we'd all been together too much and they wanted to see if it would be better for us. I didn't understand, and I was fairly angry and scared about what I had done wrong. And I then had to adapt, and the new friends I had to adapt to were doing drugs and alcohol already. This led me to a very dark space that just kept tunneling down through high school, and I ended up in jail when I was 20. But it was actually one of my cellmates who made me get angry enough to say, you have so much. You need to, basically she was saying to me, you need to be angry. You need to get out in the world and use your anger to get where you're capable of getting in life. It took this wise, streetwise woman in jail to help me see that I had all these gifts that I was not using and had not been acknowledged. And it was anger. It was the, oh yeah, I'll show you, the power of I'll show you, that got me back when I got out of jail, went back to college, graduated summa cum laude 2 years later, and it wasn't easy. It wasn't easy. So, you know, I make it sound easy, but of course it wasn't. I was a drug addict and had been for years. But it, you know, I learned at that point how to use my anger. And to this day, I'm still angry. I get angry about a lot of things. But it's like I've learned, okay, you're angry. How do you want to use the power of this anger to make a change, either for myself and my own life, or in the world around me? I worked in corporate for a long time, and you know, and I think the power of my anger gave me the courage to stand up and make some changes that needed to be made. There's a lot of power in anger, but what happens with anger is that it gets diffused because we don't acknowledge anger and we judge it. So what happens is the anger gets hidden behind all these other emotions. You know, people either on one end, they're disappointed, they give up, they just say, screw it, you know, or at the other end, they get cynical, they get belligerent, they get skeptical that change can't be made. So when we say anger is in a lot of different emotions that we see, but underneath it all, there was something that the person wanted or expected that they didn't get, or they don't see a way of getting it. And to understand, you know, with our clients, what is it that you wanted or expected to happen? And is there a way of getting that or getting something similar? And making the anger okay, you know, like just be angry. But better to be angry and let's understand it than to try to shift it or make it go away or, you know, it's like, oh, it's okay, you don't have to be angry. Please don't ever say that. you know, to instead say, wow, you know, let's take a look at, you know, the power of that anger and what changes, you know, how we can use that power to make a change either for yourselves or for the world around you. So again, anger shows up on very much on a scale of either surrender, which is really what my mother was. She was just bitter. All through her life, her father had died when she was young, and her brother got everything. It was just her and her brother. He got to go to college. She didn't. You know, he got to play sports after school. She had to work in the store. And then they ended up in Phoenix, and her mother got killed in a car accident, and the will said, I'm leaving all your money to your brother because you can find a man to take care of you. Look at Kathy. Yeah! You know, and this is Phoenix in the mid-40s, and I'm Jewish, and there were a lot of places that wouldn't hire Jews. You know, there was a lot of places they couldn't go, you know, the country clubs and all of that. And so she was limited in her own ability to take care of herself. Okay, and so, you know, and it was interesting. My older brother was born 8 months after the marriage. So you also kind of wonder, you know, was this something that had to happen? And so I understand now why my mother was angry, and how she worked very hard, even if she couldn't emotionally connect with me, to make sure I had the opportunities in my life to have what she didn't have. And I, to this day, am so grateful, you know, that she did that. And didn't understand it for many, many decades. So the thing is that we want to allow the full processing of emotions with our clients and with everyone that we're with. They need a safe space. You know, I always say the beauty of coaching is that it's a place where people can come and be themselves, and it may be the only place in their life where they can fully show up as themselves. Certainly in their companies it's difficult, and even possibly in their families. As I said with my mother, that it's difficult. So to be able to create the space where everything they bring is good and it's okay is what we strive for in coaching. And so we don't just tolerate, we want to appreciate emotional expression, to appreciate everything that they bring, because that's the only way we can create that safe space for them to react, to process what's going on, and then to learn from it, to have that new awareness, to have that insight. So, you know, I love the ICF definition. I know, Terry, you know, we created this one a long, long time ago, and it still holds. You know, and I got to talk with them because they put up on the website the whole thing about partnering but took off the creative, resourceful, and whole. And I said, you know what? Actually, that wording came from Alfred Adler in the early 1900s, so it didn't come from a coaching school. It came way early on, and it's, to me, is what defines and what differentiates the distinction of coaching from everything else, every other profession out there, that we are people's thinking partners, and because they don't need us to fix them or change them, because they're creative, resourceful, and whole all on their own. And all we're doing in coaching is truly helping them to see beyond the frames of their stories, to see beyond where they're stuck right now. Or as Richard Boyatzis, in so many words, says, you know, you can't see outside of the box until you see the box. We help people see the box so then they can see outside of it. And it's your presence that helps them feel creative, resourceful, and whole, no matter what emotions or no matter what they're bringing to the table. And it's what we all yearn for, is being that fully accepted in that moment. And so, you know, I always, when I teach coaching, I always say, you know, when you try, and when you jump into render aid, which sometimes we do in coaching, it's like, you know, to make them feel a little bit better, that you weaken them, you know, that you're not allowing them to be fully there. And then they feel bad for what they're feeling, or they want to take care of you. And I've seen that too. I'm sure Terry has, in assessing, you know, how many times the coach then wants to take care of the client. You know, I'm working this one cohort right now, and every time I get this one woman to be coached, you know, over the months, when we're doing the feedback for the person who, the coach, she always jumps in to take care of her coach. I'm like, you know, could you hold off on that for a moment? She's like, well, I learned something in the coaching. I'm like, I'm sure you did. You know, we're just looking at the process. It's so funny how quickly, without thinking, especially, you know, if you're a heart-based person, that you want to jump in and take care of someone. So being able to catch that urge to do that is so critical in coaching. So when I had asked you that question, it's like the subconscious, not even the, or the unconscious, not even the subconscious, the unconscious brain, your primal brain, when it sees anything that could be of harm, including people's expression of anger, there is a physical reaction. Did somebody? Okay. I think Christina said something and then she left. But anyway, we do have a reaction. We react by nature. Now, once it gets into our consciousness, then we can deal with it. But you know what? It's like, okay, I know when I'm coaching, when I have judgment, I know where my judgment is. All right. I'm a judgy person. We all are. And it's better that I say I have judgment, because then I can manage it. You know, and so to say that I have a reaction to people's intense emotions, yeah, of course I do. Okay, and the quicker that I can just, oh, look, there it is, it's in my stomach, that I can breathe it out and so I can be present. So it's really important that we as coaches know within our body where we have those reactions, because they're natural, because that's what our brain does. We don't just normally just like, oh, I love everybody and it's okay and they can be whoever they are. You can have that after as a matter of habit, but know that you have a protective instinct in your body that happens before you have choice. So it's what we choose to do after the brain reacts that allows us to maintain a safe, inspiring connection with our clients. You know, and to recognize if ever we have a fear. When I talk about coaching fears, there was this fabulous master's thesis done by a guy named Josh Steinfeld, and it's up on the ICF website, where he went out with both beginning coaches and experienced coaches to discover what are coaches afraid of. And he came up with pages of fears. I just love it. You know, and when I get the coaches to talk about that fear of doing harm, fear that I won't be of value because I'm not giving advice, fear that I might hurt them in some way. You know, Harriet always said, you know, nobody ever died from coaching. So that sometimes even if we have storytellers, you know, like we might have some impatience or just some anxiety. You know, so again, just to recognize I'm a human being. I have reactions. Of course I do. And better that I recognize that so I can come back and to release it. And come back to be present, than to pretend they're not there. So for those, you know, of you, I'm sure you've studied emotional intelligence. It's emotional intelligence in the moment while we're coaching is just to notice and to choose. We don't even have to understand it. You know, yeah, we can understand it later if we want, like, what was that? But in the moment, how quickly can you notice and then choose? And what I love about Van Gogh's statement is it's the little emotions that mess us up, that we don't, you know, we have a hard time noticing, just that little twinge of discomfort. You know, that's why I wrote that book, Discomfort Zone. We have a twinge of discomfort, you know. But those are the things that are the great captains of our lives. And we might say something or not, even more so not say something, based on just that little twinge if we don't notice it. So it's important that we do. So the two big emotions that I think take us out of coaching are fear and judgment. You know, so we've talked a bit about, you know, when somebody shows anger. And, you know, and for those of you that are teachers, this goes for you too. You know, because I remember I was teaching a class in China. Yeah, and I love coaching and teaching in China because they've taught me how to recognize my judgment. Because they're always triggering me. And I was teaching an emotional intelligence class, and this person just kind of kept asking the same question over and over in many different colors, you know. And I finally got a little impatient, and this one guy says, "Well, that was very emotionally intelligent." I'm like, busted, you know. And so it's like I tend, my reaction will often, when I'm teaching, will show up as a little bit of defensiveness. I know that, you know. And so, again, better that I know it and I can catch it so I can breathe it out and come back to be present and love my students, love my clients. In emotional intelligence, we're taught, you know, for us to... Yeah, question? No? Okay, that was just somebody. And please, if you have a question, take yourself off mute and ask the question. I'm happy to answer your questions. And I'm trying, want to make sure that we have a little bit of time for conversation as well. So I told you, you know, it's like I know my anger is in my stomach. My judgment is my solar plexus. Fear, I tend to feel in my neck. But you all, you know, you may all feel it somewhere else. You know, different people feel fear in their chest. I've had people feel it, anger in their ears, fear in their legs. So it's really important you know where your emotions are, because the quicker... So I know it's a twinge. I don't have to understand it. I don't have to know, you know, is it judgment? Is it anger? I don't have to know that. I just know I had a little like in my body that I need to just breathe, release, and come back and be present. You know, so again, it's the big emotion. So I told you, like in China, I had this one guy who was HR director, and he wanted to try to figure out should he be a coach when he retires. And I asked him, I said, "What do you love about your job right now?" He says, "I love helping people. I love helping them recognize their potential, seeing the light in their eyes when they know what it is that they're best at doing. And I love instilling the principles of communism." Bingo! I felt it right there. And it was my perfect opportunity to breathe out and come back to this man who loved people and loved developing them. And it's not on me to judge, you know, whatever his ideology is. But I had that reaction, and it was so amazing how big it was, because it's so embedded in me. You know, I grew up in the time when they were having us do drills, the word communism, you know, we had to like hide under our desks because we were going to be bombed by the communists. I mean, whether it was Russians or Chinese, it didn't matter, you know, so it's instilled in my brain. And so it made me recognize, oh, that's it. It's right here, right here. That's where I feel judgment. It's like, oh, yay, now I know. So now I know, even when I have a little hit there, you know, what it is I need to do. So it doesn't show up in the way I ask my question or in the energy between me and my client. And that's where it'll show up. Even if you manage it well in your words, it'll show up energetically. And that's why we want to be able to recognize it. So it was Edwin O. Wilson in his award-winning book on human nature who says we can either be victims of those biological reactions or masters of our destiny with our biological knowledge. So it's really important that you identify, I am a human being, I have fears, I have judgments, I have my own anger, and this is where it shows up, and the quicker I can catch it, then the quicker I'm the master of it. Otherwise, it chooses for us. So, that was, you know, so I mentioned anger and then judgment, and I told you how that showed up. So, you know, I always say, you know, practice. Go places where your judgment's going to come out. Like, go run around an airport. If that doesn't trigger your judgments, I don't know what will. But, you know, it's good to have it triggered to help you to identify it. So, you know, and again, I live in airports, so I know that one. And I'm a very small person, so I'm not even 5 foot. So that's why I get triggered there. Just, you know, people just don't see me. And it drives me up the wall. I think that's the hardest thing for us when we're not seen. And, you know, so I get into crowds and they just don't see me. And I just want to, like, slap them. Hello, I'm here. So, yeah, it's helpful then to recognize that. So we also have, we're all judgy people by nature, by protection. We have to judge. You know, when your students walk into your classroom or you as a coach walk into a classroom, your brain is saying, where is it safe for me to sit? Okay, it's just normal. There was this guy who's an expert in diversity, and it was one of my students who told me this story, and he was saying how he, you know, sees himself as quite inclusive. And he went to this conference, and there was, you know, like 500-600 people in the room, not a lot of places to sit, but there was a number to choose from. And he went and he sat down and he turned and he looked at the guy next to him. Now, this man is Asian, and he looked at the guy next to him, and then he looked around the room and realized that his brain had found the only other Asian man in the room. And he sat next to him, and he did not consciously do that. So he said, I have to even recognize, even though I'm an expert in this, that my brain is still going to judge what is the most safe place, the safest place for me to be, you know, and that we judge is what's right or wrong. And that's why there's still a tendency to want to give people advice when we coach and to judge what they're saying. Again, better just to acknowledge it. So we can handle it than to pretend it doesn't exist. So I have my interpreter in Russia. I was teaching this to an MBA class, and she says to me at the break, she says, I don't judge people. And I said, oh, well, that's fascinating. And she says, no, everyone says to me how they love that I'm non-judgmental. And I said, that's great. So how did you learn how to be non-judgmental? She says, no, it's just natural. I went, well, but, you know, there's a rare person that it's natural because it's a human reaction. And she goes, no, it's just who I am. I said, okay. And then in the next breath, she starts to tell me about how, you know, there's one about her husband and she loves him, but you know, there's one thing that's bothering her. She just had a baby and he keeps calling her the little mother and she hates that. And I said, oh, sounds a little judgmental to me. So you see, we don't even recognize. And again, better that we see it and we just laugh at it. It's like, look at me being judgy. You know, that's the better way of handling that than to pretend it's not there, because it is. So the question then for you all is to start recognizing, where do you feel judgment? And, you know, this is something I've just been studying the last few years, because I think I always saw judgment as a thought and not an emotion. You know, and it was, again, my work in China that made me recognize, no, it's an emotion just like all these other things. You know, so where do you feel judgment or impatience, you know, when you've got a storyteller client or embarrassed because maybe you said something and they reacted with anger to what you said. But also, where do I feel compassion? Where do I feel care for my clients, courage? Because those are the things I want to shift to. So remembering, emotional intelligence is the ability to shift your emotions, not just recognize them, but to choose how to feel in the moment. So I feel my judgment, but I want, so that client in China, I came back to loving this man in front of me who cares about people. I had to know what to shift to in order to do this. I work with, a lot of coaches come to coaching because they're heart people, which means they don't access their gut frequently. And so courage is something they have to work with. I tend to be a courage, I lead with my gut. So I needed to really work on accessing my heart. You know, so we look at, what is it that is the harder emotion for us to shift to that we might need in coaching, and practice that. So we first start by noticing our feelings and know that no matter what, we set the emotional tone, and it's our tone, our energy between that affects their capacity to learn and to grow. So an exercise in Outsmart Your Brain is just to start noticing. Spend a few days noticing, what am I feeling? Set your phone to go off 3-4 times a day, you know, and just say, what am I feeling right now? What could be causing me to feel this way? And what is it that I want to feel? To shift to that. And it's so interesting, because when I work with people to do this exercise, they start to notice patterns and didn't realize that they had all these emotions during the day. And we do. Usually at the end of the day, we think, oh, today I felt this way. But throughout the day, you're feeling quite a few emotions. So it's really great to stop and to recognize that. So a couple more tips I want to share with you. In the book Discomfort Zone, I talk about how to create that safety bubble where people feel safe to show up with you no matter what. And it does start with emotional choice. So before you even go into coaching, to stop and recognize, what am I feeling right now? Especially if you're a coach that, well, no, I'm going to take this back. I was going to say that works at home, because we're not really, you know, we've got so many things going on, but at work, you know, there's predominant feelings at work that don't always fit into coaching. So to notice, what am I feeling and can I choose? And they say if you can catch your emotions within 6 seconds and make the choice to feel courageous or curious, love, respect, that you can actually change the chemistry in your body. If you've been feeling certain emotions for some time, it's going to be harder, and you're just going to have to work at it a little harder to really be deliberate. You know, taking that moment before you coach of really breathing in the emotion you want to feel and knowing that you feel it throughout your body, as well as you want to recognize this while you're coaching, if possible, so you can shift. So you can shift, because we feel emotions during a session as well. In the book, I do talk about full body presence. I won't go through that here, but a lot of you have done this work. And on my website, Outsmart Your Brain, if you go to Discomfort Zone Coaching Tools, you'll see a visualization that will help you to open your nervous system, which is your heart and your gut, as well as your head. So it's really important before you go into coaching, as well as while you're coaching, to make sure that your nervous system is open, not just your mind. It's all connected. And if you do this work, what's really fascinating, it's not just for you to put out your emotions, but there's been some really amazing research done in the trauma field with therapists who have worked at opening their nervous system before they do therapy. And they've had trauma patients that have never been able to speak of their trauma to open up for the first time. You know, so there's this a psychological safety that's created when your nervous system is fully open, as well as it allows you to access your intuition instead of cutting it off, because your gut and your heart is talking to your brain all the time, because it doesn't have voice and it must be interpreted by your brain, and then your brain will often filter it out. So if you're fully open in your gut and your heart, you're better able to hear what you're picking up from your client. So intuition is, you know, isn't from outer space, it's from inner space. So we pick these things up, and we want to share what it is that we're sensing and for them to consider. So, you know, in coaching, we see, we hear, we notice emotions and emotional shifts with our eyes and our ears, but also with our gut and our heart. And then we share it back. You know, I have a new book coming out in June called Coach the Person, Not the Problem, A Guide to Using Reflective Inquiry. And what I've recognized over the years is that we as coaches don't use our reflective skills as much as we aim for to ask questions. And questions are powerful, but just the reflection, you know, here's what I notice. You know, you just shifted. What occurred there? You know, I'm sensing that this is what's critical to you, and just offering it to the client, and they can respond in any way. That we don't use our reflective capability as much as we do our questioning. And reflective inquiry is reflection plus inquiry. And this was defined by a guy named John Dewey in 1910. So again, it didn't come out you know, with just coaching. He was an educational reformer, and he wanted teachers to help students to think more broadly for themselves. And that's where much of our coaching comes from, is from Dewey's work and what has happened since then. So it's not therapy. It's not consulting. It was actually came out of education, which I love, since that was my second master's. I love that. You know, we're just broadening people's capability to think. Again, coming back, that we're a thinking partner. So there's full body presence. And then the final thing is that what I love about the creative, resourceful, and whole is that we believe in our clients, that if we can help them to think, they will see what's possible for themselves. Maybe they might need some courage to speak it, but it's there. And again, that is the great distinction of coaching, is that we know that if we just help them think and to think through where they're stuck and the gaps in their logic, you know, and the values, the conflicts of values that's getting in the way, if we can just help them to see that, that they'll be able to put it together to know what it is that they're missing in that moment. And I love coaching for that reason. Because I believe that when we do this, when we help people to do this and they recognize what's beyond the stories they were telling, that we are uplifting consciousness on this planet. You know, and all of us coaches, that's what we're doing, and then we pass it on to them, and then they pass that on. And that's the difference. The big difference that we're making, and that's why I'm so passionate about coaching and why I'm so grateful for Terry for nominating me, because it means so much to me to be recognized by my peers for my passion. I love that. So what I often teach is what I call non-reactive empathy. So, the difference between empathy and sympathy, that we can understand, we create the safe space for our clients and come to understand what they're experiencing, but we don't take it on. Please, please don't take it on, because then we cannot be present for them and help them to see beyond. So we receive with no judgment. We appreciate their experience no matter what it is, unless there's... And when it comes to anger, if we really feel they're going to harm us, then you need to take care of yourself. But other than that, it's like, well, okay, so they're angry. That's fascinating. What's behind it? You know, what is it that they want in this situation? We reflect what we notice and explore how whatever it is they're expressing relates to their desired outcome, which we've already established as a part of the coaching, what it is they really want instead of what they have. So when it comes to anger, I say catch it. You know, catch it. Don't try to make it go away. Help your clients to catch it. So they then can choose, is it something they need to release? Because they've been holding on to it for a very long time, or do they need to keep it so they have the power behind their anger to make the change that they need in their life, to have the courage to stand up, to speak up where it's uncomfortable, to take the step that they couldn't, you know, to activate that power that woman in jail gave me when she told me, she said, you know, and I was feeling sorry for myself. And this is, you know, after we incited a riot that didn't work. So, but I was feeling bad for what happened. And she's like, oh, my God. You know, actually, you know, she didn't just say it like that. She stood up and pinned me against the wall and said, you have no idea who you are. And she says, you are so smart. You're strong. You so care. You need to use that energy, because when you get who you are in here, you can do anything out there. And she made me recognize that all those people that said I couldn't accomplish anything, and my probation officer that said my life was worthless, you know, and I would never amount to anything, and all of that, that it was like, who are these people? I'll show you. I'll show you. And I was able to go on and accomplish with my life what I have. And I have no problem talking about it, because that was a significant moment that she helped me to see how to use my anger instead of being lost behind it. So in coaching, we have to have courage and acceptance to reflect and inquire, to stop and think about, you know, what's going on with them. What are they thinking? What could they be causing them to feel the way they do, to help them understand and how they want to use it. So I have a few minutes for questions. And, you know, that's my final thing. Anger is just energy moving through the body, and it can lead to the courage to act. And I want to say this isn't just in coaching, but it's in your entire life. You know, oftentimes we give people the space in coaching that we don't in other relationships. It's really important, no matter who it is, whether it's a child, a partner, a coworker, that we allow emotions to have a life of their own and just try to understand it instead of making it go away. So, what questions do you have? I have about 5 minutes.
Marcia, can you go ahead and stop sharing your screen so people can see you as they ask questions? And everyone, remember to unmute yourself to ask. So go for it. You have a few minutes to be able to have a piece of Marcia. Wow. You knocked them speechless, Marcia. I want to say that I am very, very happy about what you were saying. It really reiterates what we try to get across to our students.
Yeah, I'm sure, knowing both you and Terry as I do.
So yeah. Thank you for that. Well, Terry, you have a question.
It isn't a question. It was an awareness of all the emotion going on in me, and I was just being with that emotion and feeling it as you suggested we might do, and I decided to take that challenge. So thank you for all the places that are zinging and ticking and oozing and popping right now. It's busy in there. Thank you, Marcia.
Yeah, you're welcome. You're welcome.
Oh, Paula would like to know your website again.
It's
Here, I'll put it in the chat.
Outsmart your brain. Also, if you go to coachtheperson.com, you can sign up for announcements and when I create bonuses and things like that for my new book. So I will incorporate that into my website at some point. I've just been busy, a little bit busy. I've been in the last 2 months to 6 countries. So, yeah. And still have one more little trip left, but here in the country. So, And also, I have a request. If you like this, Terry mentioned about Global Gurus. You know, the voting is on right now for next year.
Ooh.
And, it would be really great to have an ICF coach be number one coach in the world. So if you would go to globalgurus.com. I think it's .com. If it's not, it's .org. And go under coaching. If you vote, we'll just vote. I'll say I'd love for you to vote for me, but yeah. But you can take a look at the coaches.
Marcia, may I ask you something?
Mm-hmm.
First of all, thank you very much for your very interesting topics. It is something that really moves me. May I ask you, if I identify that in... Personally, it tends to move from anger to fear to insecurity. How do you clearly identify what is the message behind it?
Yeah. You know, that's a great observation, Edgar. So it's like, yeah, anger migrates if we don't deal with it. So you're right. It shows up in a lot of different ways. But in coaching, you know, we're just noticing what's present. And often what will happen when I start to notice how they just skipped over something, you know. So, I mean, what's behind that? Or when they get a little irritated. And you start to notice that, and they're able to start articulating it, the anger will often show up. So if there's anger behind that, if you get them to talk about it, you know, then all of a sudden they're like, yeah, and this didn't happen. And, you know, they promised me this, or I was talking and he interrupted me again. And, you know, you'll start to hear the anger behind the word. I would say, you know, just start with noticing. To me, that the insight that we're trying to provoke in coaching often comes from noticing an emotional shift. You know, it's even more so than the words, that it's the emotions they're not noticing. They may not even accept it at first. It's like, no, I didn't show that. But then they come back to it. So helping people to understand their expression, you know, by just noticing, like, that was interesting. What happened there? We don't have to evaluate it. We're just interested in the emotion that was expressed. There's so much that you can open up by just doing that.
Hi, Marsha. This is Dalia.
Hi, Dalia.
From Israel.
And oh, excellent.
I just want to say that I feel that everything that you talked to were focused on anger, but when clients are focused on their fears to change,
yeah,
I think that those things that you talk today is also, we can handle fear of clients, or us in fear, in the fear of clients. So yeah, fear is also energy that you can use it.
Yeah. And you know, thank you, Dalia, because a lot of times, without even thinking about it, we may judge their fear. Mm-hmm. Oh, you shouldn't be afraid. Well, they are. And it just is, you know, emotions again are just emotion or energy moving through the body. So thank you for that, to allow them to be afraid, you know, and just let's come to understand, you know, what it is your brain is imagining in this moment. You know, I was reading Gottschall's work, The Storytelling Animal, this weekend. I was rereading some of that, and he was talking about how active our imaginations are all the way through our entire life, you know, and that's in coaching. We're often just getting, when we say the story, you know, the story, a lot of the story is imagined and created and not real. But we have to hear it. What is it they're imagining at this moment? So thank you. Thank you for that. And making it okay, no matter what it is they're experiencing. Yeah.
Well, Marsha, we want to thank you very, very much for sharing so much wisdom, and your personal experiences too have been very meaningful and touching. And I'm going to speak.
Thank you for just reminding me, Terry. Y'all, if you put in my name in TEDx, you can see that the TEDx Atlanta, the TEDx on the power of anger. So,
okay.
Yeah, if you want to see that, it's like 12 minutes. So.
Excellent.
All right, I have to run.
Yes, thank you, Marsha. So
we are all coming to Arizona. Marsha, we are all coming to Arizona because our next retreat is in Tucson.
Yay!
Thank you very, very much. Blessings. Happy holidays.
Happy holidays.
Yeah,
okay, and everybody, be sure to set your schedule for next month. Our teleseminar is with Theodora.
Mm-hmm.
Who's going to talk to you about adult development.